cows have long, beautiful eyelashes. Have y'all never been on a farm with cows before? You are listening to From the Dome to Your Home podcast, the Municipal Association's weekly look at legislative action and issues facing cities and towns around the state. I'm your host, Casey Fields. Everybody, I have a special treat for you this week. I have a special returning guest to the podcast. Please welcome a recovering Mr. Scott Slatton.
That's why we need a cough button. Mr. Producer, can you work on that? We need a cough button like they have in the radio studios.
Scott has been deathly ill over the last several weeks, and we are glad that we could wheel him back into the studio and set him up to where he can sit upright and record the podcast.
Took me out of the iron lung.
Well, listen,
long enough.
That's what we all were concerned about.
Did you see recently where the last person in the United States who was living in an iron lung finally passed away?
Yes, I did see that.
How about that?
There's a movie.
The Big Lebowski.
The Big Lebowski, but there's another movie.
There was an iron lung scene in The Big Lebowski.
I know, but there's another movie about a guy that lives in
I don't know what that is.
So the House this week was on furlough, meaning that they did not meet in subcommittee, committee, or on the floor.
Yep.
We have nothing to report from the House other than we have two bills that have already passed the Senate, so we are no longer concerned about crossover.
Correct.
The property tax exemption bill, S-1017, and the abandoned buildings tax credit bill, Senate Bill 1021, those bills are both in the House Ways and Means Committee.
Right.
So they should be looking at a subcommittee hearing in the next couple of weeks.
You would expect.
That's kind of where we are on those two.
Right.
Five more weeks until session is over on May the 9th.
Well, are you counting the week they come back in June or not?
Oh, no. This is because that's governed by sine die. I'm talking about regular session.
The end of the regular session. So, yes,
the end of the regular session, May 9th.
Well, is it 5 weeks or 4 weeks? Because next Wednesday is April the 9th, so
right.
It would be 4 weeks.
You know, I don't
Whatever.
Really know. I just look at the calendar and go 1, 2, 3,
right.
4. So we're getting into this touchy period where after crossover and before adjournment, where it gets to be a little hairy in amending bills and those kind of things toward the end of a legislative
session. Well, this is a good practice week for us.
Makes me nervous.
Since essentially this week was crossover week for the Senate, because we don't think that they're going to meet in statewide session next week.
We don't know that, but until they are still in session today. It is Thursday, so they're still in session working through the calendar. Until they adjourn today, we will not know what their plan is for next week.
Because
usually Senator Shane Massey, Republican Majority Leader from Edgefield, he will announce when he, you know, makes the motion to adjourn.
But,
he will tell everybody what's going to happen.
This week, at the start of the session this week, he essentially laid out his plan to say he didn't expect they would meet in statewide session next week. So,
but
it could change.
That leads me down this path,
sure,
if you want to talk about it. So they had a joint and several liability bill,
Senate 533
on special order, which was the forced debate on the calendar spot, and they worked for several days on it, but could not come to a consensus.
Yeah,
they took several very close votes, and it just didn't. It's now back on the contested calendar.
Well, so they worked through this thing in subcommittee and in committee. Senate Bill 533 for a number of weeks, held a number of subcommittee hearings to give all the stakeholders the opportunity to come in and talk about it. And of course, the joint and several issue, liability issue, is tied to the liquor liability issue. So the liquor liability has kind of forced this debate about joint and several and changing the joint and several laws kind of force that to a head.
Right.
And so where a lot of people just want to try and solve the liquor liability problem, there are members of the Senate, particularly Senate Majority Leader Shane Massey from Edgefield, who has for a number of years wanted to attack the joint and several issues that he sees that need to be addressed.
Correct.
And of course, for those of you who aren't familiar, the joint and several laws in South Carolina dictate who is responsible for paying damages in what proportion, if any proportion, if somebody gets sued. And so people who settle out of court, their proportion of fault in a particular lawsuit cannot be considered by the jury. Only the defendants who get sued are the ones who are responsible for the damages that are awarded. And a lot of people see that as being inequitable to those defendants when they may not be responsible for as much liability as somebody who settled out of court, for instance.
Right.
And some people say, well, it's this inequity that has driven liquor liability insurers out of the market when, and that may be the case in some cases, but because we don't have enough data from the Department of Insurance to make those determinations, it's been back and forth. But as you said, Casey, they attempted to get to that this week. A number of procedural votes ended up failing, and so that bill is back onto the contested calendar. And I don't, at this point, see a path forward for joint and several or liquor liability in the Senate at this point.
Well, tort reform, Senate Bill 87, that is also contested as well.
Yeah.
So you're looking at a lot of contested bills.
Well, and
Senate bills that at this point today, if the Senate is not going, if they're going to follow Massey's path next week, then crossover's done and they've not met the...
Exactly.
They haven't quite met that deadline.
Now,
but there are always amendments.
Yeah, and there's still a vehicle for the liquor liability in particular. Jason Elliott's bill, 5066, has passed the House. It's in the Senate now. So they could take that up and use that as a vehicle to try and accomplish some of these goals.
And do you know that they
just don't know if that's going to happen?
They referred that bill when it was introduced not to judiciary but to banking and insurance.
Yeah, interesting.
Which I think is a very interesting.
Well, and you know, I think that's because of the requirement that the IRF set up the insurer of last resort program.
Yes.
So that, you know, I think procedurally that makes sense.
So there's still a way for liquor liability alone,
right,
to move forward.
Yes,
we've met. Crossover,
yep.
It's still alive.
And one of the key...
Oh, and I will tell you this. Unlike the House, where they don't come into town at all, the Senate will still meet in subcommittee and committee meetings. Yeah. They're just not going to meet on the floor. So Senate Banking and Insurance could have a sub and a full next week on that bill,
I think
they so choose.
The big hang-up on S-533, the joint and several bill, was in current law now... Under the joint and several statute, is an exception. The protections and the procedures that are in the joint and several law do not apply in current law to somebody who was willful, who was doing something illegal. And it specifically says if they're selling illegal drugs or if they sell alcohol at all, not legal or not. Those people don't get the procedural considerations in the current law. Well, Senator Massey's bill, actually Senator Tommy Alexander, the president of the Senate from Oconee, he's the primary sponsor. His bill got rid of that exception in the current law so that those same people, that don't get those protections now would presumably get those protections procedurally that are in the current law. And that, to me, seems to be one of the major sticking points on this, because the trial attorneys in particular, those people that are in that exception are easier targets, if you will. And that's just a layman. That's me as a layman expressing this. I'm obviously not an attorney, but it seems to me that those people being excluded from the protections in joint and several, mm-hmm. And I say protections, but the procedural protections mm-hmm. in joint and several, those are easier targets for right. somebody who's looking to sue somebody. Now, if you did something willfully that caused negligence and right. harm, obviously you should be pursued. If you sold illegal drugs to somebody and they get harmed as a result, yes, obviously you should be pursued. But just because you served alcohol to somebody,
right?
I don't think that necessarily, that should necessarily be an exception in the current law. And to me, it seems that they could enshrine or preserve all of those exceptions except the alcohol. Take alcohol service out of it.
Right.
You still get what you still accomplish what you want to as a trial attorney, perhaps, but you also, the people who are trying to protect the liquor liability or make the liquor liability issue easier to deal with and get insurance, perhaps, take them out, then perhaps that would help solve that problem too. That's just my very simplistic
yes.
and
non-lawyerly
view of it.
I think that's what people are looking for.
You think?
You know, I think it's too, I think it gets too complicated and people just really want it to be distilled down into something they can understand.
Well, so that's how I see it. I may be entirely wrong. And if there's any attorneys who are listening, please correct me. I would love to be corrected. That's a primary problem. And then, of course, this issue that I alluded to, I mentioned a second ago, in terms of assigning blame to those who are not in the room, who are not mm-hmm. named defendants. Mm-hmm. It's called the empty chair.
Right.
The empty right. chair is also a sticking point. But I think the empty chair hurdle is easier for them to get over at this point than the exception that's in the current law. So that's just my view. And
here,
of course, our interest in this whole thing is, you know, making sure that our small businesses
yes.
that sell alcohol
yes.
can continue to do so.
That our main streets that are just bustling with activity for
right.
our residents and cities and towns and visitors still
right.
have restaurants and bars to go to.
That's why we're following this. We're also, yep. and of course, also following the tort reform law S87 that changes the tort caps from 300 and 600,000 to 500,000 and 1,000,000. But that's been in play. That those limits have been in place since the '80s. The 300, 600. So we recognize and understand that it's time for a change,
right?
To raise those limits, and so, but it's contested as well. We'll see if it goes anywhere. That's a perennial bill that the Senate has passed a number
right.
of times
and
before, and the House just never
House.
Has taken it up.
So. Also, shout out to Erica Wright, the military TIF bill. House Bill 4552 received third reading in the Senate today. So it has passed the Senate. It will have to go back to the House because the Senate made a very slight amendment to the effective date.
Yeah.
The House will have to do is concur
yeah.
on that bill to get it enrolled for ratification and signed by the Gov.
Yeah, that bill got a little bit of a speed bump thrown in front of it yesterday.
It got hung up just a little bit, but we, and Erica's not feeling well, and she, all from, you know, her sick bed, handled
yes.
it all
yes.
amazingly.
Yeah.
So
we all jumped in
yeah.
there. And, yep.
So I think that she did a great job in ushering that through and kind of, you know, piecing everybody together to make sure that nobody was upset about it anymore.
Yeah, that's going to hopefully help the former Charleston Navy base, particularly North Charleston
right.
section, get moving forward and offer some affordable housing along with all the other great commercial things that are going to take place there.
Also, we're not going to talk about it today, but in a future show, maybe an extra edition or something like that, we filing ended on Monday at noon.
Candidate filing
yes. for the 2024 elections for House and Senate, South Carolina.
Yeah.
As well as congressional. And it's going to look different,
the body.
From the analysis from the House and
the
Senate.
House and Senate, yes.
So I would love to have a show dedicated to some analysis.
Yeah.
If we could do that.
We already got an offer for some, candidate analysis from one of our city administrators. So,
oh, I didn't know that. Who was that? I love candidate analysis. Yes. Anybody that would like to provide me analysis on an unknown candidate,
he said,
would love it.
He said, it's too much for an email. Probably going to need a phone call. So,
love it. No problem.
Love the dish on unknown candidates.
All right. A Senate Judiciary Subcommittee met this morning, Thursday morning, and passed out 5118, which is a big, huge, and is actually called the South Carolina 10-Year Energy Transformation Act, a huge, robust utility bill sponsored by Speaker Merle Smith, passed it out to a full Senate Judiciary Committee today to further work on the bill.
Yes, this was after about an hour and a half's worth of testimony, an hour of which was taken up by a solar industry advocate.
Yes.
Who actually, his company is working with big energy,
big power
here in South Carolina to stand up solar capacity. What their ask is that Senate Bill 909, which is a bill by Senator Tom Davis from Beaufort Bluffton, Senator Davis's bill, it has more to do with opening up competition for power to individual power users, for not retail people like you and me, but specifically big power users, like think Century Aluminum down in
Goose Creek.
In Goose Creek, they would like to be able to renegotiate or buy their energy, their power, a lot more inexpensively than what they're paying Santee Cooper right now. So that would be an example, I think, of what Senator Davis is trying to accomplish for other large energy users across the state. But he also is very interested in renewable energies, not specifically, but solar being chief among those. And what the solar advocate asked for, would be essentially required by Senate Bill 909, is that if Duke, Dominion, Santee Cooper include solar or other power generating techniques in their integrated resource plan, which, as Keller Kassam from Dominion and others described as, well, actually Jimmy Staton from Santee Cooper described today as the roadmap for how they're going to meet capacity and generate electricity over some long period of time. What 909 says and what the solar guys want is to say that if you have solar in your IRP, then you must deploy that. You must develop that.
IRP is an integrated resource plan.
Mm-hmm. You must do this. Rather than, as Keller Kassam from Dominion said, well, yes, we have this as a part of our plan, and we're deploying solar now. We're developing solar with the very guy who's here advocating. But sometimes, he says, like when you're using Waze,
right,
when you're driving somewhere,
and I don't use that.
I don't either, but okay, a lot of people do. But
makes me feel better.
Waze tells you there's a wreck ahead, and it redirects you somewhere else.
Scott, tell our listener what service you use when you come up upon traffic that you are.
Especially when I'm on the interstate, and this is a lot of fun. We love doing this. I'm traveling somewhere. Like tomorrow, I got to travel to the Low Country.
Right.
And I'm going to run up on a traffic jam somewhere on 26 or 95. I immediately get on the phone and call Casey Fields and say, okay, I'm at mile marker X, and I'm going in this direction. I need you to tell me.
I'm eastbound, I'm mile marker whatever.
Yeah, I need you to tell me what the problem is and what my exit strategy is.
Yes.
So you immediately deploy your resources by way of the traffic cameras through the
SCDOT. DOT
511. It's an app. It's a fabulous app.
And it is incredible. Thank you, Christy Hall.
I am.
And Justin Powell.
I'm keeping handles, both hands on the steering wheel while I am sitting still. I don't want to get busted up for texting and driving.
That's right.
So you will immediately go to the app and start finding the best camera.
Or I'll say, look, it's clear in the next mile. Hang on. It's just a bunch of looky-loos that are, you know, looking at a car that's all changing a tire.
Meanwhile, I'm giving you my observations yes. from the ground.
Yes.
And calculating and devising alternative routes.
And there's also, and we start talking about highway numbers and how you can get off at the next exit and take this and loop around.
Yes.
If there's an accident, I do get a real-time description and picture of the accident, plus all of the services that are on scene.
Precisely. Yeah. So,
it's a give and take. We might be able to start some sort of subscription service.
It's a mutually, I don't like that. I mean,
you don't want anybody else to be able to call me.
I need your services on demand, and right, if you're dealing with other customers, then that takes away.
Then I wouldn't be able to be like, you're going to need to get off in Orangeburg and get on Old Charleston Highway and take it all the way down.
That happens.
My sister does the exact same thing, Scott. You're not alone. I do offer my services to her if she's driving. She'll call and say,
you know what, you know what the sad part is, though?
What's that?
The frequency with which I have to do that every when single I'm on
time.
The interstate.
Every single time, because there's always something.
There's always a wreck.
That backs everybody up.
People can't drive. Anyway, we diverged.
Yes.
Just like Keller Kasam said, the integrated resource plan for big utility is a roadmap. But sometimes you have to diverge from that roadmap.
Correct.
And if you pass this law in 909 or this requirement that we have to do certain things, then that is going to hamstring us and potentially force us to expend resources and time and energy on developing a generation capacity that we don't need or cannot afford, or don't want to, or would cost our ratepayers more than they would if we used some other thing. So they passed 5118 out, which is Speaker Smith's bill, with the understanding that big solar, big power, Senator Davis are going to get together over the weekend
and
bring to the full Judiciary Committee some language by way of some amendments to try and accomplish
that everybody can agree with.
Yes. Let me back up.
Okay.
Why do we care about it? Because of our electric cities across the state. These energy bills do affect us. We have to prepare integrated resource plans as well. They're not nearly as extensive as big energy because we don't generate power for the most part, but still we have an interest in them. We want to make sure that we protect our electric cities that are spread across the state.
Let's talk a little bit about something that you rarely see happen on the floor of either chamber that happened this week.
Yeah.
One of your favorite bills.
Oh my gosh.
That we're not tracking. But one of your very favorite bills, the Yankee tax bill.
Yeah.
That bill failed to get second reading. And that is very rarely something. Usually people carry over or whatever. But
it was reminiscent of the Dilapidated Buildings Act as it was going down in flames on the House floor many years ago. And I felt bad for Senator Goldfinch because it's his bill, Stephen Goldfinch from Georgetown. His bill, Senate Bill 208, that is now dead.
Right.
It failed
to get second reading.
It lost on a 7-34 vote. Right. I was really disappointed. But it would have
allowed. I thought it had a little bit more support than that.
I thought so too. It would have allowed counties to put on a referendum whether or not to charge an additional $250 to people who are coming to South Carolina and asking for a South Carolina driver's license.
So like normally you pay $10 or $20 or something like that. You'd have to pay like $300.
So, and then those funds would be used to pay for infrastructure, you know, basic local government needs to help deal with the growth that is occurring across the state. He made a really good argument, and I was actually kind of shocked that that bill even got up for debate. But there it was, and it went down.
He even agreed to an amendment to
exclude active military.
At that point, Scott, like, I was like, well, maybe this is going to roll. Yeah, like, I kept thinking, like, okay, he has, you know, he even said, I'm embarrassed, military himself. He's like, I'm embarrassed. Right. I didn't think of that. Okay, let's do it.
But
I thought, like, okay, all right, we're getting somewhere. No, when it came down to it.
And it just went down in flames.
That was interesting this week, kind of off the, and then another interesting thing that happened was the complete and utter shellacking that went on in a Senate Finance Constitutional Subcommittee on the $1.8 billion.
Yes.
That was, quote, found.
We know it exists, and we've known that it exists for 7 years.
Yes.
We just don't know to whom it belongs.
Right. Right.
These are state funds.
And current Treasurer Curtis Loftus testified in front of that subcommittee before session and then again after session was over.
6 hours.
In the afternoon, he announced in that he would not seek another term as treasurer.
Yes.
And if you remember, we had a similar mishap. I think it was 1.3 billion.
Is that
number correctly? So, with Comptroller General Richard Ekstrom when he resigned that position, and then it was Brian Gaines who was in the administrative offices,
Department of Administration.
Governor McMaster appointed him as the Comptroller, which we work very well with Brian. We are, you know,
and that 1.8 as Treasurer Loftus said is a part of like a 5.9 billion of funds somewhere. I'll just tell you, he really flushed the mouse on this week, and it was something I don't think I've ever seen before. He and Senator Larry Grooms from Bono, who is the chairman of the subcommittee, were literally shouting back and forth at one another.
It was ongoing.
I mean, it wasn't even one time. They were consistently yelling. Treasurer Loftus felt like he was just under attack the entire time, and I think he probably was.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that it was, in some cases, it was not unjustified, but that this is a problem that you've got two state agencies, and the way that our state agencies are structured and the way our laws are structured. Treasurer Loftus says, look, I'm just the bank for South Carolina. I take money from other agencies. I invest that money, and it is up to them to tell me where it goes when they want it back. Or it's up to them to keep track of whose money it is when I send it back to them. Comptroller General Gaines is saying the treasurer's office should know where this money belongs.
Well, it was a
Treasurer Loftus says no, that they're responsible for that. And then George Kennedy, who's the state auditor, was implicated in this and pulled in. A lot of finger pointing going on right now. And didn't you tell me that they're coming back next week or today?
Today, I believe that.
I don't know if Treasurer Loftus is going to be there again or not. But it was a grueling, display of elected officials, because remember, Treasurer Loftus is elected. And so aside from his budget being run through and approved by the General Assembly, and they have some oversight function, he's really pretty autonomous. They could impeach him, I guess, as they were prepared to do with former CG Ekstrom. I don't know that they're to that point yet, but
so they
it was not a good look.
That subcommittee is going to meet today after the Senate adjourns, but they're dealing with budget provisos.
Okay.
So they're not going to deal with that. I will tell you that right now the Senate is one of the very few uncontested bills on the calendar they are now debating Senate Bill 1158, which is the kind of a course correct bill on the open carry that Massey is introduced, and he's explaining right now at the well, and he's taking a lot of questions. It has to do with the guns on school property.
Right. Yeah. So if you'll recall, the Guns for All bill that was passed a few weeks ago and is now law allows 18-year-olds to carry firearms, but and you can't carry firearms on, you're not supposed to be able to carry firearms into public schools.
Right.
But if I'm 18 and I can carry a gun, I should be able to bring it onto school grounds.
So if it's in your truck,
so it's in,
if you keep a shotgun mounted on the back of your truck to go hunting, or if you keep a pistol in
I could carry the pistol onto school property.
Center console, and you park your truck in the senior parking lot.
So that is one of the things that Senator Massey's cleanup bill 1158 would do is make sure that, hey, no, if you're 18 years old, you cannot bring a firearm onto school grounds.
Property.
Yes. So that's so one of the things that it does.
He's been taking questions. It's kind of late. I know it doesn't seem late, but it's a little late on a Thursday for them to be in session. But they're still, you know.
Especially since they're a bunch of them are probably going to go on spring break next week with their families.
So we'll see.
What else are we going to talk
about
today?
We'll see what happens. That's really all that I have. I mean, you know, we've got some deadlines coming up. We've got filing closed. We've got.
I thought the sister senator's attempt to get an abortion referendum.
On that election bill.
Onto an elections bill yesterday.
I didn't see that coming.
No.
Way to go with the surprise attack.
No, that got.
I mean, what a strategy.
That got smacked down pretty easily, but.
Senator Bright Matthews, Margie Bright Matthews from Walterboro, she made her point.
And the elections bill, that bill is 1120, Senate Bill 1126. Our current state constitution says that every citizen of the U.S. and South Carolina is eligible to vote. What that bill does, however, would put a referendum on the ballot this fall, I presume, to change the Constitution to say that only citizens of the U.S. and the state can vote. And this is in response to some Supreme Court ruling in California where they had similar language in their original Constitution, and that Supreme Court said, yeah, illegals can vote in their elections. It doesn't make any sense to
me. Let's say illegal immigrants.
Illegal. That's what I said.
Let's just don't
illegals.
Call them illegals.
Illegal immigrants. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Undocumented
people. They are people.
Well, I understand that. Okay. Yes. But they are some of them. Anyway.
I completely agree with you, but let's just refer to them as.
Sure. Got it.
A person.
The PC police are on patrol here on the show, everybody. So, but that procedural attempt that
now wasn't that, that...
keeps abortion. But you know what? That's keeping abortion as an issue in South Carolina, as we all have known that it's going to be.
That's the bill that came about because there were rumors that there were people voting that school board elections or something, or cities were letting anybody vote that lived in the city,
Senator Campson said yesterday that there are municipalities across the United States,
none in South Carolina,
that are allowing undocumented people to vote in municipal elections. Well, I don't know how that happens in other states, but I don't know how that would happen here,
right?
Unless an undocumented person presents fake documents,
right,
which anybody could do,
a fake license, because now we have photo ID, so you have to present your photo ID.
So
from the South Carolina DMV,
I'm not sure how that is a problem here in South Carolina. And of course, I think that was one of the points that was made: is hey,
right,
this is a solution in search of a problem. But Senator Campson said, well. You know, this is a belt and suspenders approach, as he said.
Right, just to make sure your pants don't fall down.
To make sure that this never could happen in South Carolina, despite our Supreme Court probably, I can't imagine it would ever rule in favor of an undocumented person being allowed to vote in our elections. But anyway, that's where we
are. But just to note that this is a Senate bill. It made crossover, obviously, because they gave it third reading today. It still has a long way to go.
Yeah, and of course
it still has a long way to go.
It'll have to be on a ballot, and I'm sure it'll pass because people don't read those things. So,
yeah, I mean, I think that's really it for me. We've talked about this over and over again.
So we didn't have anything to talk about.
Well, I mean, you know, you got in here and you started talking, so that kind of made me think about it.
Mr. Producer, she said before we started, "I'll just let you talk."
Just kind of prompted you to talk.
Thank you. Glad I could be of help.
How is your son doing?
Big Bubby?
Yeah.
He's doing good.
Good.
He got called out
from the storms?
Tuesday night about 11:30. A tree fell on a line, and then they ended up had six broken poles in backyards.
Wow.
That they had to work
where?
On. I don't know, over all Tuesday night into yesterday.
From the storm, yeah.
Yeah, from the storms that came through. So he was pretty tarred when he got home yesterday.
Let me ask you this.
Sure.
And this is the trivia question.
Ah.
What municipalities in South Carolina have a sun in their names? Meaning the letter combination S-O-N.
Consecutively together, S-O-N.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Not just any municipality with an
with
S and an O and an N. No.
Okay.
It has to have
Mr. Producer likes to trick me and trip me up.
It has to be a sun.
Huh.
It's going to be great.
Boy. That's okay. That's a tough one.
Do you want to know the number of them or do you want to tell me how many? Would you like to know a goal to get to?
Yeah, give me a number.
All right, there's seven.
Good gracious. Golly, I can't even think.
You know them because you say these municipalities all the time and you don't even think about them having a sun in their name. Not S-U-N, not the bright shining sun that's outside on this gorgeous
S-O-N.
Day. S-O-N. I'm happy to give you some.
Give me a clue because I'm still recovering from the walking pneumonia and
of course,
you know, I'm still a little addled. So give me a clue.
All right. Go Tigers.
Clemson, of course.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Think in that same upstate area.
Hmm.
Think about the Golden Strip.
Simpsonville?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's a tough one. Wow.
Stay in the upstate
hmm.
for one more. We're going to stay in the upstate for one more. I can give you the mayor's name.
Give me the mayor's name.
One of my favorites, Terrence
Anderson.
Roberts. Yes.
Anderson. Wow. How would these just not have come to me, Mr. Producer?
I don't
Producer?
Know. I think it's the medication.
Keep going.
Let's see. Now let's travel over to the PD.
Hmm.
And there are two in the PD. I was actually on the cover. This is a town that's kind of clustered together with some other small towns, and I was on the cover of the phone book when I was in middle school in Chesterfield County.
Oh, gosh. I can't think of it.
Jefferson,
yes.
Jefferson, Mackby, Patrick, Ruby phone
yes,
book.
Yes, mm-hmm. of course. A rural telephone
when
exchange,
there When there was
will.
A phone book, my children would be like, what is this? Then in Florence County, there is a town. It's like Simpsonville because it has a ville after the sun. Johnsonville,
yes.
Then if we go on over to Aiken County, similar to the town of Jefferson, it's the last name of a president. Not to be named after the president, but it's the last name of a president, similar to the town of Jefferson, not named after a president.
I'm totally drawing a blank.
Jackson. And then in Hampton County, there's a tiny little town, a precious tiny little town in Hampton County called the town of Brunson.
Brunson. Wow. Yeah,
you got hosed on those, dude.
That was a tough one.
Yeah. Mr. Producer
was
gloating.
He was tired of getting his fanny whooped. So,
hey,
look, I got to take a beating every now and then.
He was,
You got to take a beating every now and then.
Keeps you honest.
That's right. Keeps exactly.
So Scott, as far as I, once the Senate concludes their debate on this bill, I expect that Senator Massey will reiterate his plans for next week. And when he does that, I will include it in this week's Dome, so everybody knows if they're planning a trip to Columbia or if they have to do business with their state senator, they will know
who's here and where they may be when they visit. Yes.
Yes. So they will know that the House will be in regular session next week to get through crossover.
And with crossover next Wednesday, it is going to be wild and woolly in the House of Representatives.
It's going to be wide open. So we've got to really.
It'll be all hands on deck. Yeah. I even told David Ibragimov, our intern, you're coming to the lobby with us. Yeah. Next Wednesday.
You're going to sit in that gallery and listen and watch and take notes and watch everything that happens.
Because the shenanigans will commence.
Because anything could.
That's right.
At this point. Listen, I'm glad you're back. I'm glad you're feeling better.
I do feel, I'm about 95%. I feel a whole lot better than I did this time last week.
We've got.
You know what? I happen to think about something.
What is that?
I think you're going to take offense at this, but I think I really believe this. I think you have a little voodoo doll of me somewhere, and you gave that to Mary Alton to take to school and to cough on all of her friends and wipe their faces on it.
Nobody.
As punishment for me taking Thursday 2 weeks ago off to go skiing.
Nobody in the entire elementary school has been diagnosed with walking pneumonia. I think you got sick as a result of your time off. Altitude change and the temperature change.
I didn't have anything to do.
That happens to be my opinion. Everybody hang tight with us. We're going to have some guests coming up after the end of session, some analysis on elections and primaries, and of course, all of your updates on the end of the legislative session on bills that we're following. Everybody have a great weekend. Be sure to follow the Municipal Association's podcasts on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible, Spotify, and SoundCloud. Find the latest from the Municipal Association on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and the Association's website, masc.sc.